Welcome to Evolving KM, a podcast where we discuss how knowledge management is progressing and the impact that's having on KM professionals. I'm Amy Monahan.
And I'm Gwen McAlpin. In each episode, we interview people who have either worked in or on the periphery of knowledge management. We get their perspective on how this profession is evolving to meet the shifting demands of legal service delivery. We hope you enjoy this episode. Good morning. This morning we have joining us is Kim Stein. Kim is the National Manager of Knowledge Management at Thomson Reuters. Kim and I have known each other for many years, and she is quite connected in the industry. Kim, do you want to introduce yourself and maybe tell us a little bit how you got into KM?
Sure. So, as you mentioned, Kim Stein. I've been in the legal industry since 1992. Prior to that, I had a different career, a sales career, but in the office supply business. And if I can for a moment, I am in the legal business because of the disruption of the office supply business. And I think it's very relevant to the fact that we keep waiting for the disruption,
in legal. Right.
But I felt that in the sense that the office supply industry at some point was mama and papa kind of shops that you went and you bought your office supplies. The folks that started Staples were in the food business. And what they understood from the food business was volume, margins very small. The office supply industry had large margins and not so much in the volume game. And so there were two pieces to Staples. It was the buying power to buy in volume and sell in volume with discounted prices. But the marketing genius was to indicate on the receipt the savings that you got. Everyone does that now. You can't go into a store and know what you didn't save. But well, they were...
Legal does that too.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Right, we'll give you discounts.
So the office supply business... just those big superstores ate up the small stores and they couldn't survive. And then I was a reseller for a couple of the manufacturers over the years and I got laid off and then found a job in the legal industry with what we would call Mead Data Central, which became LexisNexis. So my first 8 years in legal was with LexisNexis. A couple of years in the dot-com world, and at the point I entered, it was more the dot-bomb world. And then eventually made my way to Thomson Reuters. And in the first year, I was a strategic account executive, just taking care of some of our biggest pharmaceutical and insurance customers. And during that time, we had developed a product called WestKM, which was really a brief bank for law firms. And many librarians had tried to do that before, but it was not successful because they were asking for people to give them model documents, and that wasn't working out. I got hooked on that product, and over a series of years, I was a sales rep for that product locally in the New York area, and then that morphed into a more expanded role nationally. And now I would consider my role, because it's expanded to document automation, we have a product, Contract Express, Doc Automation now is hot in the KM industry. What my role has expanded to more of a consultative role, especially on the WestKM side, and I find myself talking to firms about knowledge management in the big, and less about the products. We're looking for solutions together, and it would be really nice if they bought my products so that I can eat. But my focus has been really bringing networks of KM people together because I think that's really important. I think it's been very important for the legal industry. So a long story, even longer, as I tend to do.
So that's a really interesting aspect of your role. So you are able to travel around and see what everyone is doing and connect dots for people. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, that's what I'm doing in Portland today with you. You know, there are a lot of firms. So the evolution has been that there were a handful of firms many years ago that were doing KM and doing it well. And I think over the years, there have been a lot of firms that have wanted to do KM, but are unsure of where to start. How do I start this? What roles do I need to take this on? And oftentimes, firms have inertia because they really don't know, have a starting point. And so what I try to do is, if I do find that firms need some advice around KM, I lend not my own opinion, but the opinions of many firms that I've visited with, and at least give them some starting.
You're sort of like a mobile benchmark.
Right. Right.
That's it. Right. Exactly.
Yeah, no, and you've definitely helped me with that, with making some connections, whether it's other folks in the industry or you should talk to this person about this thing, and that's been very helpful for me. So, you know, with some of this change in knowledge management that you've seen over the years, what are some of the kind of priorities that you think that KM had more so when you were sort of first seeing the industry versus, you know, how it's kind of changed to what maybe the priorities are today, or like, you know, maybe what the focus is of the KM program?
Yeah. So, you know, years ago, I think that KM was just one of those big terms like AI. It could mean anything to anyone. And I think it was trying to put a definition around it was kind of the hardest thing. And I think over the years, there's been an improvement in the tools that are in the industry. Mm-hmm. There are learnings with regards to the approach. If you only have a handful of people failing, there's not a lot of lessons learned. Mm-hmm. And I think there's more people doing projects that you could call KM, and more successes than failures, I'd imagine. And also that expansion of roles. I mean, one of the things is I have a little podcast, not like yours.
Let me give a plug. KM with Kim. You want to listen to it. It's Kim's podcast, and you can get it on her LinkedIn page. So be sure to look for that.
Thank you.
Okay, advertising done. Go
well, on. The advertising, one of the podcasts I did was around ARC. And the ARC event for KM professionals, which is in October in New York City, at one point was very stable.
Yeah.
60, 70 people every year. It was around that. And all of a sudden, over the last 2 years, it has jumped to over 100. And last year was 170.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Now, how does that happen without understanding that KM has grown to an enormous volume of people and firms that are more concentrated in this area? I think that innovation has become a catalyst for KM.
Yeah.
And a lot of the innovation projects that are going on are just in the wheelhouse of KM professionals.
Right.
When it comes to, you know, data analytics, when it comes to, you know, the other big external KM, how do we make some money on it, and how do we present it to our clients for collaboration and all those kinds of things.
Right.
And so, you know, those roles, I mean, even to the point where I co-mentored a Columbia Knowledge Management graduate class this year. And they had a specific project they were doing. I think I might have connected them with you.
Yes.
They were Columbia. Yes. They were doing a project around expertise. Our new foundation was one of the tools in the marketplace. And I said, go out and call these people. And I set them up with about 25 of my friends.
There I am connecting.
And that was my role with the group. I'm not, I never went for a graduate degree. So some of the stuff was over my head. But I know people. And so they needed information. And that's what they did. But of interest was just people graduating with knowledge management degrees.
Well, that's a change in the entry into the field that we're seeing. And, you know, so Gwen, you're more of a traditional model.
Where
you were a practicing attorney and then you transitioned into knowledge management. My background is a little bit different. I almost directly went into knowledge management. And now we're seeing people coming out of law school or different programs going directly into knowledge management with special skills that they've learned in school.
Yeah.
Right. But I think that's sort of, you know, back to what you were talking about, that a lot of these things were coming out of the KM department. Do you think that's because people who were working in knowledge management just have that flexibility and the ability to go and adapt and learn new things quickly and then apply them?
I think that there is a certain personality with KM, and one of the greatest is that collaboration.
Right.
That community, you know, is tight. If you need to know something, they don't keep their cards close to the vest. They want to help make success of everybody's KM program. Kind of that PSL role versus KM attorney in this country. Interestingly, one of my podcasts is with David Hobby, who is...
Just thinking he recently posted some questions trying to get some data about if people's numbers of PSLs in their firm have changed or if they're anticipating changing.
And I used to use that term interchangeably, PSL and KM attorney, but David educated me. in that PSL role, he defines as someone who's just looking for precedent. Mm-hmm. Basically, their job is to find those good documents and precedent documents. Mm-hmm. In a KM attorney is a more expanded role because they take more of a role in looking for the right tools for a practice. In his case, he represents the litigation side of Goodwin. You know, he looks at tools, he looks at processes for improvement overall for the practice. And I think that's a little bit mm-hmm. different than what a PSL, what mm-hmm. we think of when we think of PSLs. Mm-hmm. And I think that in this country, that KM attorney role is very, that 170 people that were at ARC, many of them were KM attorneys.
Yeah, right. I think that's an interesting distinction, and I think it's really kind of illustrative of the changes that have happened in the KM industry. I've been in knowledge management for around 10 years now, and certainly when I entered KM, the focus was very much on precedents and the content, finding the content for the practice groups, and it's very document focused. And now it seems that we've moved much more to how can we connect them with the technologies and the processes that are overall going to help their practice. There may be some aspects that are about the content, but a lot of it is about the process.
Well, it's about connecting the content. So right. years ago, it was just about that content, building mm-hmm. that brief bank. Now, nothing isolated like that is of any value. It's how do I get right. everything connected right. together so I have the right content at the right time to the right person. And, right. and it has expanded in our expectations mm-hmm. of what should happen. And I think that's a result of KM people mm-hmm. pushing the boundaries of what was and what should be. And I think innovation today, even though I'm hesitant to believe that everything is, you know, is AI, and even the products on the market, some of the new products on the market, I think that it's going to take many, many years for them to have a training set that will get them to the point where that data is as reliable. I yeah, think right. the ideas are all out there.
Right.
And one of the roles, the newest role, is having that innovation as part of your title. So it's
right. I'm an example of that. Yeah. Yeah. Practice and, innovations manager.
And that's growing.
Right, right. And yeah. innovation, you're seeing it in the KM department.
Yes.
It's coming out of KM. And I think that's because, again, back to the special skill set that KMers have, right? So we're not just content, we're also tools. And we mm-hmm. know how to leverage them to connect the content to people.
Yeah, yeah.
I think something that's happening with innovation as well is whereas it might have, you know, when you think about innovation in law firms, a few years back, it might have been more at kind of the enterprise level, or, you know, we're building new kind of software or in-house, you know, development projects or something like that. And now I think, and why I think innovation is falling very much under the KM umbrella, is a lot of the product that's coming out of this is much more practice specific. Mm-hmm. So instead of being something that's like, here's an LPM tool or a workflow management tool or something that's supposed to kind of apply to everyone, what we're certainly finding, and what I think a lot of these innovation projects are things where you're getting very deeply embedded in the subject matter of the practice group.
Well, I think that's the evolution as well, right? I mean, yeah. KM or solve. I think this is it. It is KM has solved those problems mm-hmm. and now are back to, I think they started in the practice groups to find the pain points.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think then they had to go to the enterprise and solve those problems. And now they're back focused on two things, specifically on the practice group and on external KM. Those mm-hmm. are the two things, because it makes perfect sense. Each practice group has different pain points. They mm-hmm. need different tools.
They work differently.
And
right?
they work differently.
Yeah, and we can't have a one-size-fits-all for the
The other thing was KM was very litigation-focused years ago as well. Mm-hmm. And transactional practice has only been in the last 4 or 5 years that they're getting the cool tools
right.
as well.
That's right. true. Well, AI was e-discovery. I mean, that's
exactly.
where AI and legal
for many
started.
Years, predictive yeah. analytics right. was born
was
of e-discovery.
Right. Right. Right.
And then all of a sudden everyone realized, oh, there's transactional too.
Yeah.
We have tools for that. We can create tools for that and we can
yeah.
focus on
and understanding that workflow, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. Even for Thomson Reuters, who's been Westlaw for years, mm-hmm. litigator, now it's transactional workflow. What tools do we put together mm-hmm. to make that happen?
And that's certainly where we're finding a lot of value, is being able to talk to practice groups about their specific workflow. So if you're working on this type of transaction, we have a panoply of resources that are available for you, and you're going to, you know, here's how you're going to sequence them together and use them, and we're going to try and connect them. But it is very much about, like, how do all these things go together rather than kind of the standalone.
Well, and I think adoption of any tool or program is more solidified when you're looking at a workflow and a total. If you can incorporate a work into a workflow instead of having a tool here and a tool there, I'm finding that there's more adoption in the law firm when they knit together.
Right. Well, it's less disruption and less change
into
how people are used to working.
Yeah,
and so I think that does really make sense as to why KM is getting so much into these innovation roles and is growing so much, and maybe the roles of KM are changing a bit, is because there is that connection to the practice groups, where the KM department tends to be the ones that kind of straddle the practice group and the administrative side of the firm and doing, you know, firm projects. So I think that is a way that, you know, because you have to understand the technology, you have to understand the resources, you have to understand the workflow. And putting that together, I think, is becoming sort of this valued skill of KM.
Yeah.
I like to think of it as we're multilingual, right? We can sort of speak everyone's language enough to know, to come to a common, like, okay, here's what you need, I'm going to translate this for you so we can get you what you actually need.
Yeah, agreed.
I like that, multilingual. So, you know, we have KM is gaining interest among students, among, you know, as a career path. So what advice do you have for someone who might be thinking about wanting to come into a KM role or to kind of reinvent themselves within KM for where kind of the future of KM is?
Yeah. I still think practicing attorneys that no longer want to practice, that want to recover from that, are good candidates for KM roles because they do understand that practice of law. Mm-hmm. But in addition, I think that traditional librarian role has been morphing over the years. They've got a great knowledge management skill set. Mm-hmm. They understand the practice of law, they understand the content, they understand how the workflows as they are. I think librarians should be making a huge push at their firms to incorporate KM in their titles and bring some KM into the firm ever so, even if it's baby steps in to do that. You know, the law students that are coming in, I think, are great news because they come equipped with a different skill set,
right? Yeah.
And a higher level of kind of looking at KM from a different perspective. Mm-hmm. I think the growing roles have been around, you know, the LPM and around data.
Yeah.
I think the growing roles are in this understanding data and what it means to a firm. That whether we call them data, you know, scientists or whatever they're calling them, I think that's very official. But I just think having a base, if you have a basic real understanding and a like of data, that's the next, I think that's the next level for a firm, is really
understanding. Well, you have a comfort level with it, you understand it, you understand what you can do with it and what you can get out of it, how to sort of interpret your data.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of, you know, particularly with the AI, there's, you know, bad data in,
right,
garbage out.
Right.
And there are a lot of other areas as well where if you don't really understand your data, you know, there's this concept of kind of big data, and law firms obviously have a lot of data, but in some cases it's not that
good.
Much.
Yeah.
And it's not,
and it's
not big data.
And it's not good, or it's not clean. So it's like, what conclusions can you truly draw from the data that you have? And so you need people who really understand that.
Yeah, definitely.
That, yeah, that's,
I mean, one of the things that I've done to grow my knowledge around knowledge management is to read what I can. There are a ton of blogs. So I get the Pinhawk every day, which gives you those general topics. They're not all about knowledge management. But I'd say out of the five a week, there's three or four that just, you know, blurbs from the UK one, NACO, Nick Milton. I use a thing called Feedly, I've picked in Feedly a combination of, you know, ILTA KM and Above and Beyond and the Prism, you know, so you get Ron Friedman, the Three Geeks, and a law blog. They're not exactly KM, but they touch on a lot of peripheral KM things, right?
Yeah,
so I think if there's an interest in it, they should read what they can. There's a couple of books on the market. Patrick DiDomenico wrote a book. I think some of it's a little dry, some of the KM books that are out there. ARC publishes a couple. I made the mistake of buying one and thinking I would read it.
Well, but I mean, I think that's a good point that where books are a tough medium for KM because things are changing so rapidly.
Right. It's very true.
And I think it's the same thing that goes back to education in law schools, is that how do you educate students in a manner that is enduring, that's going to set them up for understanding how technology and process and data and all that come together to, you know, to kind of enhance their understanding or their careers as lawyers or KM professionals. But it is so rapidly changing that do you teach people, you know, specific technologies and specific concepts or is it, you know, what is kind of the broader?
I think they need to know the concepts behind it.
Yeah.
But I think, like you said, I think having that core mm-hmm. of being flexible,
right.
Multilingual.
Right.
It's characteristics rather than hard-coded skills. And I'd say an element of it, it would be great to have technical background
right.
as well. So you know how to get the project done. The biggest thing is how to be a champion. I mean, that's you have to have a skill set in KM. I want to call it a sales skill set.
Yeah, no, I think that's
because
true.
There is a salesy aspect. I mean,
everybody has
aspect.
To sell.
You're showing, showing attorneys
We're
tools.
We're constantly promoting
right.
Exactly.
Right.
Tools and resources to foster adoption.
Right.
It's very...
Exactly.
It draws very much on sales.
It is. And sales is not a bad word. It's just how you approach
mm-hmm.
the sales.
I didn't say sales was a bad word.
You didn't, but others have. I've been proud. I've been a salesperson for 40 years. And so, yes, I'm that old. And yeah, I started selling food, then sold office supplies, and now legal services over the last 20 years or so.
Well, what is sales? It's connecting people to products, right?
It really is. And here's the thing that I learned from a sales guru years ago. People like to buy. They don't want to feel like they've been sold.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I've used in my... in the back of my mind, so it prevents you. People need stuff, and if you connect them to the stuff they need,
if you solve their problems, you're making them happy, and you're making you happy.
I mean, exactly.
It's the same in our roles when we're showing attorneys or clients products or, you know, whatever solution we've put together for them. If it strikes a chord, they will be more willing to adopt and use it in their practice. If it doesn't strike a chord, then it's not going to work. They're not going to be sold on it.
Yeah, so you really have to find that connection to them, something mm-hmm. that's meaningful for
right.
them.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, Kim. This has been a great conversation. I've really enjoyed talking to you, and I love where we kind of came out with looking at the various characteristics that are key for knowledge management versus looking at specific skills. So thank you for joining us and sharing with us your background. And for our listeners, be sure to check out KM with Kim as well. Thank you.
Thank
Thanks,
you.
Kim.